You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Imagine. You open your eyes and find yourself standing in a dense, humid jungle. The ground's wet. You look to your right, and beautiful, large, yellow and blue flowers with such vibrant colors that they don't seem real. Above them, giving you some shade, are ferns the size of maple trees. You scan your environment and see trees as big around as the house you live in reaching to the sky. You walk towards a small outcropping and start to climb up to better assess your situation. As you climb, a dragonfly with a 2-foot wingspan flies past your head. You feel a surge of energy as you notice that your breathing is less labored even as you climb quickly up the outcropping. When you get to the top, you are over the ferns and you survey your surroundings. It's a beautiful, lush forest with some trails throughout and a mountain in the distance. Just then, you hear something large growl off to your right. In front of you, the ferns begin to move and part as something else draws closer. Just then, a long neck comes up out of the ferns, with it a mouthful of foliage, and staring at you intently is a brachiosaur. This is a different time. This is the antediluvian time. The time before the flood. Something like this could have well happened to humans after creation. After all, the Bible tells us that all animals were created between the 5th and 6th days of creation. The time of dinosaurs has passed, according to mainstream evolution. They all died out around 65 million years ago due to most likely a meteor strike and a sudden change of atmospheric conditions. And that is what is taught to our children as fact, even though it's still called the evolutionary theory. However, for something to even be considered a theory, it needs to be observable and repeatable. So at best, evolution is a hypothesis. So, if this isn't truly what happened to the dinosaurs, what did happen? Why did they die out? When did they die out? Or did they die out at all? So when the idea of creation is brought to you as a Christian, or even if you are an atheist asking questions on the mainstream narrative, how can you explain the disappearance of the dinosaurs? First thing we have to look at is the pre-flood world. The idea of a global flood is found in over 200 cultures around the world, relating back to a common idea that there was a global flood, and if this is known to these cultures, then there was someone on Earth prior to the flood and lived through it. As in the theory of evolution, there was a global catastrophic event. They focus on the meteor strike, of which there definitely has been plenty, but from a biblical point of view, the flood changed everything. As the intro suggests, when we look into the fossil record, we see that prior to the flood, most plants were much bigger, even common ferns, and the same could be said about the animals. Dragonflies have even been found fossilized with 2.5-foot wingspans. We think of the dinosaurs first, with so many being multiple tons in weight, with specimens like the brachiosaur potentially weighing north of 80 tons. most everything was bigger prior to the flood. And there are a few reasons for this. And one idea that seems to check the boxes is the vapor canopy. The vapor canopy was an idea first proposed by Isaac Vale in his 1912 book, The Canopy and the Longevity of Life. This idea was later popularized in the 1961 book, The Genesis Flood by Whitcomb and Morris. There are multiple canopy models, but they all have one commonality in origin. They interpret the firmament in Genesis 1:7 as a water-based barrier that surrounds the earth until the flood of Noah. Genesis 1:6-7 says, "Then God said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the water from the waters. Thus God made the firmament and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament. And it was so." What would be the effect of such a canopy? First off, a barrier such as this would protect the earth and all the animals from its harmful solar radiation. The sun emits electromagnetic radiation, including ultraviolet and infrared. We know that limited amounts of sun are good for us and help with vitamin D production. However, as with most things, too much is bad. We see skin cancers and a decline in skin quality as it is exposed to the sun for extended periods of time. The largest organ in our body is our skin, and it's exposed to all that radiation. Secondly, when the vapor barrier covered the earth, the oxygen levels would have been much higher. Mainstream evolutionary theory states that O2 levels would have been as much as 30 to 35% of the atmosphere makeup compared to our current 21%. Higher oxygen levels would have assisted in aiding dinosaurs to reach sizes that they did. A good example of this is found in a study done by the National Institute of Health. In this study called Atmospheric Oxygen Levels Affects Growth Trajectory, Cardiopulmonary Allometry, and Metabolic Rate in the American Alligator, they took alligator eggs, hatched, and raised them in three different atmospheric O2 levels. There was a hypoxic group at 12% oxygen, the normoxic group at 21% oxygen, which is our current level of O2 in our atmosphere, and the last group was hyperoxic with 30% O2 in the atmosphere. It was found that the hyperoxic not only grew faster but also larger than the other two groups. In an oxygen-rich environment, it makes sense that dinosaurs, as well as other life forms, would have had a similar trajectory as a whole. Thirdly, atmospheric pressure would have been elevated due to the additional water vapor in the atmosphere and would contribute to the overall weight in the air column above the Earth's surface, which would increase the atmospheric pressure at ground level, similar to those who are scuba diving. More water above equals more pressure or weight. Increased pressure can have benefits in the medical field in certain circumstances. If someone has edema or swelling, a compression garment like a stocking or a sleeve can be used with a pressure gradient to assist in increasing circulation. This would have been crucial for larger dinosaurs, but let's take into the account of Willow. In 1993 in North Dakota, at a place called Hell Creek, a fossilized Thessalosaurus was found that was approximately 12 foot long and was estimated to have weighed approximately 750 pounds when living. The amazing thing is that the heart was found fossilized as well. Even more amazing was the size. It was roughly the size of a grapefruit. Think that your heart is approximately the size of your fist. A grapefruit is not much larger. The increased atmospheric pressure assisted with circulation, allowing a dinosaur with a smaller heart than anticipated to be an agile animal. This just makes sense. The time of the flood came, and God commanded, "But I will establish my covenant with you, and you shall come into the ark, you, your sons, your wife, your sons' wives with you. And of every living thing, all flesh, you shall bring two of every sort into the ark and keep them alive with you. They shall be male and female, of the birds according to their kinds, and the animals according to their kinds, and every creeping thing on the ground according to its kind. Two of every sort shall come with you to keep them alive. Also take with you every sort of food that is eaten, and store it up. It shall serve as food for you and for them. Noah did this. He did all that God commanded of him. And that's Genesis 6, 18 through 22. All living animals on the earth came two by two. These were all of the animals God created, including the dinosaurs. This is where the vapor canopy came into play. The vapor canopy had another purpose that had not yet come to pass. In Genesis 2, we read, "When no bush of the field was yet in the land, and no small plant of the field had yet sprung up, for the Lord God had not caused it to rain on the land, and there was no man to work the ground, and a mist was going up from the land and was watering the whole face of the ground." At this point, it had still not rained, and rain is not talked about until the flood. Genesis 7, 11 and 12 says, "In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, on the 17th day of the month, on that day all the fountains of the great deep burst forth, and the windows of the heavens were open, and the rain fell upon the ground for 40 days and 40 nights." Moving further down, Genesis 7, 19 and 20 says, "And the waters prevailed so mightily on the earth that all the high mountains under the whole heaven were covered, and the waters prevailed above the mountains, covering them 15 cubits deep." Two things contributed to the flood. First, the vapor barrier was let loose and fell on the earth in the form of rain. Prior to this, rain is never mentioned, and after the flood, the first rainbow is seen biblically as God's covenant that he will never destroy the earth again by a flood, which again points to it never raining prior to the event. God also declared that the maximum life expectancy of humans would decline to 120 years after the flood. World conditions changed. Increased radiation from the sun, decreased atmospheric pressure causing decreased circulation, and lower oxygen levels all took a toll on the human race, taking us away from the days of Methuselah, who lived to 969 years, with a quick decline over the next few generations post-flood. The other contributor to the flood was the fountains of the deep opening. Prior to the flood, all the land was together in one landmass, as it says in Genesis 1, 9 and 10. "And God said, let the waters under the heavens be gathered together in one place, and let the dry land appear. And it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the waters that were gathered together he called the seas. And God saw that it was good." Even mainstream science commonly accepts that there was initially one landmass that broke apart and began to drift. This landmass was referred to as Pangaea. If you look at a map, you can see how many parts of the continents would fit together like puzzle pieces. The other thing you will notice is that there are a lot of different mountain ranges that run parallel to the coasts. Think about the Rocky Mountains and the Appalachian Mountains of the U.S. when you read Genesis 7. Genesis 7:11 says, "In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, on the 17th day of the month, on that day the fountains of the great deep burst forth." It says the fountains of the deep burst forth. This caused the landmass to start to split with such force that as they were pushed apart, it folded the land up, creating these mountain ranges that we have today. There's a couple different theories of how this happened, but I will let Dr. Timothy Clary explain in a way that I never could.
What was your opinion on Dr. Walt Brown and his hydroplate theory?
Do you think
it was one big continent and got pushed apart, and with the whole
I do believe there was some sort of a Pangaea. My reconstruction that I put together, I don't know if you guys have this book or not, my carved in stone book, that covers three continents of my research and shows a Pangaea type world that I constructed based on the data. So I do believe there was some sort of a Pangaea that split apart during the flood year rapidly. I studied hydroplate theory somewhat over the past, but I think it's now been superseded by what I like better as a mechanism is catastrophic plate tectonics, which was kind of pushed forth by John Baumgartner. And I think his data makes a lot of sense with what I'm seeing, that we see a progressive flood. That as you made more seafloor, it pushed up the seafloor from below. As you make this new hot seafloor, it's like making a hot air balloon. The whole floor seafloor rose, pushed the water up higher, 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 and what I see in all the continents at the same time, is this progressive flooding, where only part of the continents flooded early. That's why, like in Michigan and places like that, you just see marine fossils. And then as you made more seafloor rapidly during the flood year, that pushed up more and more and more. So I think, you know, even though hydroplate theory is a good idea, and I agree with Walt Brown, he and I talked several years ago, I agree with the global flood, I agree with, you know, Jesus our Savior, of course, first and foremost. There was a global flood, and it was about 6,000 years ago, but I disagree on the mechanism. I think the seismic tomography, particularly in the last 20 years, has shown that subduction is real. And what's amazing about that subduction is we see subducted slabs go all the way down to the core, 1,800 miles down, and they're still as cold as they are at the surface, practically, which really indicates that these things had to be down there, had moved down very, very quickly. And they couldn't have moved slow like today. Plates are moving this much per year, maybe even this much. But during the flood year, Dr. Baumgartner, and his math has never been shown to be wrong, has modeled with this really sophisticated government computer that you're going to have rapid movement of the plates, rapid subduction into the earth. And we actually see evidence of that in the last 20 years.
The floodwaters receded, and the ark came to rest in the mountains of Ararat. When it was safe, the animals were let off the ark to multiply and repopulate the earth. This included the dinosaurs. How can we be sure that the dinosaurs made it through the flood? First off, let's look at what the atmospheric change would have done to the dinosaurs that were on the ark. Increased harmful UV radiation that shortened the lives of humans would have also had the same effect on animals, including dinosaurs of the day. Decreased O2 in the atmosphere, a drop from 35 to 21%, would result in the hearts of these animals needing to pump much harder, especially in large animals, to move oxygen throughout the body to facilitate the larger muscles. Animals, as they grew, would have been limited by this, and sizes would have declined to adapt to the new atmosphere. In the same way, decreased atmospheric pressure would have had a negative effect on circulation, and as a result, the animal would grow to smaller sizes to adapt to the situation. These smaller dinosaurs would have dispersed throughout the world to procreate and repopulate. What evidence of this is there? First off, we have to remember the term dinosaur was only coined in 1842 by the British paleontologist Sir Richard Owen, with the term dinosaur meaning terrible lizard. So what would dinosaurs have been called throughout history after the flood? Let's look through post-flood history and see what turns up. In secular accounts, we can look at the histories of Herodotus, who lived in 484 to 425 BC. Herodotus writes, "If Arabian flying snakes were able to replace themselves naturally, it would be impossible for men to live. Fortunately, however, they are not. For when they couple, the female seizes the male by the neck at the very moment of the release of the sperm and hangs on till she has bitten through. That finishes the male, and the female, too, has to pay for her behavior, for the young in her belly avenge their father by gnawing at her insides until they end up eating their way out." If we look at Isaiah 14:29, it says, "Rejoice, O Philistia, all of you, the rod that struck you is broken. For from the serpent's root will come forth an adder, and its fruit will be a fiery flying serpent." Also in Isaiah chapter 30, verse 6, is a description of the desert of Negev. "Through a land of trouble and anguish, from where come the lioness and the lion, the adder and the fiery flying serpent." Isaiah and Herodotus are both talking about the Arabian Peninsula, with similar stories of the same fiery flying serpents. If we look over towards Cambodia, the temple of Tom Prom is part of the Angkor Wat temple complex. Construction on this temple was started in 1186 AD during the reign of King Jayavarman VII, and there were many reliefs of different animals carved into the temple walls. Most are recognizable animals, however, one looks very similar to a stegosaurus with large plates down the length of its back. How would they have known what a stegosaurus looked like? In the Apocrypha, we have the story of Bel and the Dragon, which is believed to have been written sometime between the 3rd and 1st centuries BC. This is a story about the biblical Daniel and the king of Persia, Cyrus. In the story, Daniel actually kills a dragon that the Babylonians worship. In the Chinese book of Zuzuan, in one of the earliest and most important works of Chinese historical literature, which covers the period from 722 to 768 BC, it speaks of a man who was a dragon tamer and breeder and had dragons that would pull the emperor's cart. There are so many Middle Age stories of knights versus dragons and the need to slay the beast that ravaged villages throughout Europe and other parts of the known world. There are legends of dragons from countries all over the world, including all over Africa, France, Germany, Hungary, Italy, Paraguay, Brazil, Siberia, Tibet, India, Asia, the Philippines, Vietnam, Japan, Korea, Native America, and even oceanic dragons. We have biblical evidence as well. Job 40:15 says, "Behold, Behemoth, which I made with you. He eats grass like an ox. Behold the strength in his loins and his power in the muscles of his belly. He makes his tail stiff like a cedar. The sinews of his thighs are knit together. His bones are like tubes of bronze, and his limbs are like bars of iron. He is the first of the works of God. Let him who made him bring near his sword. For the mountains yield food for him where all the wild beasts play. Under the lotus plant he lies, in the shelter of the reeds and in the marsh. For his shade the lotus trees cover him, the willows of the brook surround him. Behold, the river is turbulent and he is not frightened. He is confident though Jordan rushes against his mouth. No one can take him by his eyes or pierce his nose with a snare." Secondly, Job 41. "Can you draw out Leviathan with a fish hook or press down on his tongue with a cord? Can you put a rope around his nose or pierce his jaw with a hook? Will he make any pleas to you? Will he speak to you soft words? Will he make a covenant with you to take him for your servant forever? Will you play with him as a bird, or will you put him on a leash for your girls? Will traders bargain over him? Will they divide him up among their merchants? Can you fill his skin with harpoons or his head with fishing spears? Lay your hands on him. Remember the battle, and you will not do it again. Behold, the hope of a man is false. He is laid low even at the sight of him. No one is so fierce that he dares to stir him up. Who then is he who can stand before me? Who has first given to me that I should repay him? Whatever is under the whole heaven is mine. Whatever is under the whole heaven is mine. I will not keep silence concerning his limbs, or his mighty strength, or his goodly frame. Who can strip off his outer garment? Who would come near him with a bridle? Who can open the doors of his face? Around his teeth is terror. His back is made of rows of shields, shut up closely as with a seal. One is so near to another that no air can come between them. They are joined to one another. They clasp each other and cannot be separated. His sneezings flash forth light, and his eyes are like the eyelids of the dawn. Out of his mouth go flaming torches. Sparks of fire leap forth. Out of his nostrils come smoke, as from a boiling pot and burning rushes. His breath kindles coals, and a flame comes forth from his mouth." That sounds a lot like a dragon to me. Did they die throughout history, through the spread of humanity and slaying of these dragons? Or are they still alive? In the Congo, there are rumors and sightings of a large sauropod-like dinosaur which the natives call Mokle Mbembe, which is described as a large creature resembling the biblical description of Behemoth. There are also reports of what the locals have named Emila Ntuka, which is said to be a horned animal like a triceratops, which has been called the killer of elephants. In Papua New Guinea, there are sightings of theropods, sauropods, and even a pterosaur-type creature called the ropin, that supposedly glows at night like some other bioluminescent creatures that are known to science. The Eureka Monster is a theropod-like creature that is said to inhabit the Atacama Desert in Chile. The Boringer is a creature that resembles a theropod in the Australian outback, and reports say that it resembles a T-Rex-like dinosaur. These are only a few of the encounters in the less inhabited and more primitive places on the Earth. The world is a large place with many uncharted areas. In these areas, the natives speak of terrifying creatures and describe them like the dragons or dinosaurs of old. In these places, is it possible that some unknown creature still lurks? A remnant from the last remaining dinosaurs that came along with Noah on the ark? I believe it is. What do you think?
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.